You're listening to If You Only Knew on 97.9 The Hill. Dr. Deborah Stroman brings you stimulating sports and society discussions with some of the biggest influencing forces in sports and sports business. From athletes to owners, If You Only Knew covers all the bases with informative and engaging content from end zone to end zone.
I'm excited to have my partner in crime, my academic friend, my dancing partner, Dr. Robert Turner from the George Washington University with me today. Robert, welcome to If You Only Knew. Let's just start off. I mean, there's so much to talk about, but tell the audience where you grew up, what sports you played, what's your background?
All right. Well, Dr. Deb, I really appreciate you having me here. I think we actually even qualify. We could be qualified as what do they call it? Work wife and work husband, right?
Yes.
We're a work couple. I mean, it's been years and I really appreciate that. But yeah, I'm originally from, let me start by this with saying, right? My grandparents, they're part of Great Migration coming from North Carolina, Halifax County, a small town called Tillery, North Carolina. And they moved up. My grandmother was only 16 years old in 1920. So it was an early, early wave of the Great Migration up to Newark, New Jersey. And my grandfather was from there as well. And I love telling the story that they used to tell us. My grandmother had her older brother lived in New York. And my grandparents thought that they were taking the train from North Carolina to New York Penn Station. But the train conductor said Newark Penn Station. They got it confused, got off there. The first moments after they got off there, within an hour, my grandfather got a job, and the rest is history. We wound up, you know, raising family up in New Jersey. So I'm from Newark, New Jersey. Yeah.
That is incredible. And so you're definitely an athlete. Tell us what sports you played. Did you have any particular mentors or teachers that drove you?
Yeah. Well, you know, you'll appreciate this. So my parents were, you know, after the riots in Newark in the 60s and that kind of thing, we moved us out to the suburbs, Piscataway, have a better life for everybody. And I played everything, baseball, basketball, football, track, you name it. I played everything back in those days. And that's what you did, right? You kept yourself out of trouble and all of these other things. And it just so happens I loved basketball the most, but I wasn't really had the stature to play basketball. So football wound up being something that I was naturally really, really good at, right? And in my town, back in those days, everybody played all the sports, especially all the, you know, and it was kind of very segregated. I lived in Piscataway. All the black folks lived in the same town. And so that's how you made your rep growing up, is playing on Sandlot or playing in basketball. Like that, in other words, if you wasn't cool, you never got picked, so you wouldn't play. So my whole thing was to be picked all the time, and no matter what the sports was. That was, I wanted to be that. And then in a perverse kind of way, I was playing football. I played for Coach Tom Higgins, and he was one of those old school. He played in the NFL in the 50s. And so he was like, you know, like eat nails, you know, Bronco Nagurski kind of guy, never let him see you get hurt. Right. So my background was like, I came up underneath that you enforce, impose your will on other people, and you could never get hurt. So it was one of those things. It was very sadistic in the day, but that was the brand of football we played. So, and I relished in that. I cherished that opportunity to be able to play that kind of football.
Wow. And in fact, you know, we learned so much from those disciplinary type coaches, but we also know they were right on the edge, or they went over in terms of some of the things that would not be permitted today.
Oh, no.
Wow. So
exactly.
Were you the player that liked to hit people?
Well, so my story is, the same progress, right, through high school, junior high school, you're better than everybody else, right, and all that other stuff. But I wanted to play defense because I really had that philosophy. Like, we have a good friend that we got Ron Rice, right, where we're like, I'd rather be a hammer than a nail, right? So I always wanted to hit somebody, right? That was my whole thing. But I actually, my natural position, I was a wide receiver. That was my best natural position. And I truly believe that had I, you know, gotten injured, but also had I not been stubborn, I probably would have had a 10-year NFL career. And story that I don't tell very often, but when I was in college, I went to James Madison University, and we were lucky at that time. We had a lot of guys that wound up going to the NFL. Gary Clark, if people can remember him, played for the Redskins, probably was a Smurf, right? And then we had Charles Haley. We had a bunch of guys. And Gary started as a freshman right out the gate, right? And it took me a little bit of time as in my freshman year to get on the field. So he was the man. I mean, they just threw the ball to Gary, and he was, you know, every time he could take it to the house, right? You saw what he did in the NFL. Every time he could take it to the house. I was more of that possession kind of receiver and everything. And we had just started playing Division One from Division Three, so we didn't really have a great team. We had a lot of great skill players. And it upset me after playing 2 years of starting as a receiver. I wasn't getting my due as far as I was concerned. I wasn't giving me the ball, right? And I was like, why is Gary getting the ball more than me? It's competition, which it should have never been. Had I stayed there, I would have gotten drafted that way, da-da-da. But I moved over to the defensive end and started there. But then, as you remember, we talked about, I broke my neck in my junior year. So I had to fight my way back onto the field. And then, you know, I had a 4-year pro career, but, you know, it wasn't as smooth a transition as it could have been had I done what I was really supposed to do and be patient and just let the ball come to me.
Wow. There are so many people who work in athletics in terms of kinesiology, exercise physiology, athletic training, because something happened to them, to their own body. And they were paying attention. They liked their athletic trainer, they liked their occupational, you know, therapist, their physical therapist. And so that motivates people to stay in that space. So you have the sport career, which motivates you. You had an injury that motivates you. So speak to how you were able to turn that drive, that knowledge, that curiosity into an academic career. How did you make the switch to say, you know what, I'm getting another degree and another degree?
Well, you know, it's funny because even though I study health and medicine now and health outcomes, that was not part of my academic career at all when I first started. And in fact, the reason that I went back to college to get a degree was really a story that happened to me when I graduated, and I didn't, you know, like the day I graduated, my grandmother, who was like about 5'4", as you can tell, she's very influential to me. She hated things that were going on down in the South. That's why she left to come up North and would never only go down to the South. She only went down twice, once for her brother's funeral and went down to North Carolina and then drove back the next day. But she came down for me when I went to school in Virginia from New Jersey and stayed down on the weekend. And that day when I graduated, my grandmother literally with tears in her eyes, she pulled me to the side and gave me a brand new $100 bill. And she did not have a lot of money at all. And she had told me, she said, I've been waiting for this day my whole life that one of my grandchildren or one of my children would graduate college. You fulfilled my lifelong dream, right? And at that moment, I never knew that going in. I found out later that my grandmother and grandfather, between them, they had like seven years of education, right? And I was like, if education meant that much to my grandmother, then I have to keep going. And so it took me a long time after transitioning out of football to decide, okay, it's time for me to go back. And I didn't even know what I wanted to study. And the only reason I got a PhD was because I was told that in sociology, you couldn't do anything with a master's. So that was my motivation for really going back. And I just wanted to learn. And I wanted to really live with the legacy of my grandmother because she said it was that important.
Wow, that is a powerful story when our ancestors, our family members can inspire us and speak to us. We're talking to Dr. Robert Turner. He is an amazing scholar and friend and entrepreneur. And you're on 97.9 The Hill, If You Only Knew.
You're listening to If You Only Knew on 97.9 The Hill. Here's Dr. Deborah Stroman.
We're back talking to Dr. Robert Turner, who is the founder of the Black Men's Brain Health Initiative. We've got conferences. We've got scholars that are learning, young scholars in this space. Dr. Turner, can you talk about how it all started? How did this begin, your vision?
All right. Well, you know this, and I'm happy to share it with people. But, you know, there was a time One, you brought me down to UNC, and that really helped open a lot of opportunities for me and leverage them. And then we got back together with a good friend, Ron Rice, and it was the three of us who have athletic backgrounds. You know, you played basketball in college, and Ron played in the NFL, and I played football in college and a little bit in the Canadian Football League and that kind of thing. And we were seeing that how the landscape was changing in sports, but also we also understood how we felt like we were exploited in many different ways. And we felt like, as again, we weren't that old, but as elders, people had gone through it, we were like, we have to do something to really help those who are going through this right now. We didn't know what, but we knew we had to do something. And then, you know, one day I believe you might have said it, or Ron might have said it, or somebody was like, hey, listen, we need to create a platform so you can talk to people and share about your book. And so that's when we came up with this idea about, hey, let's go down to Atlanta and basically do Carl Hill. Let's just kind of bum rush the thing, just show up and see if we can get some people to show up and listen to what we had to do. We had some friends through CDC to show up, and we got about 75 people on the campus of Morehouse. And we knew that athletes had some mental health issues, and so we just opened up a forum for people to discuss and for us to learn about, kind of me sharing about my book and the transition, the difficulty of transitioning to life after sports. But what are some of the issues that former football players are going to? And we were overwhelmed. And that was the genesis of everything that said, this needs to be something, turn it into something much larger than it is. We didn't know what. We settled on brain health because it encompasses injury, concussions, but also mental health, addiction, all kinds of issues, stress, those kinds of things. And it has just evolved. You know, here we are 6 years later, 7 years, something like that. It's like nuts how we've gotten to this point where we are.
So good that you mentioned the various aspects of brain health. I know to this day, when I talk about the conference and the work that we're doing, people will, their first comment or question has to do with concussions. And I say, yes, but it's much more than that. It's much more than that. When we think about dementia, we think about Alzheimer's, we talked about the mental health, depression, there's so much more to it. So we do have an amazing partnership with some leading people, institutes. Can you share a little bit about some of the partners who we work with and who we will hope to work for in the future, hope, work with?
Sure, no problem. We have lots of them. And I'm going to start off, believe it or not, with Harmony Bioscience. And the reason I'm going to start off with them is because they look at an aspect of health and brain health that most people don't really make the connection to. But one, they sponsor research, and they have some drugs and stuff around rare diseases, right? Rare diseases. And one rare disease that they talk about is narcolepsy, right? And we talk, that leads us into sleep apnea, sleep depression, sleep, all of the other stuff. And in particularly, one of the things that we know that I've learned from them, and that's part of what we do, is that there are a number of particularly rare diseases or a number of sleep issues that go underdiagnosed within the Black community, right? Because we don't talk about them. We don't know the signs that there are there. And so that I'm grateful for, because they give us a platform to really speak into how sleep is really a brain health issue. But then we work with the Alzheimer's Association. We're very fortunate with them, because I think one of the things that working with Dr. Carl Hill, Dr. Maria Carrillo is they emphasize a lot of Black people are about almost two times more likely to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's or related dementia than the general population, right? And then we're also more likely to be diagnosed later in the stages of the disease, right? But at the same time, we only represent about 5% of the population that participates in research around Alzheimer's, right? So the disease affects us more than likely. We know less about how that disease functions within us. And then on top of that 5%, 75% of the people that participate that are Black are women. So that means that men are virtually not showing up at all, right? So these are different areas that we're really vulnerable. And then our other really big partner is the NFL Alumni Association. And that started off slow, but it's starting to gain some real traction. There are a number of guys that have said, hey, listen, we understand this. We've had family members that have had some problems. Some of the athletes that their family members have committed suicide and those kinds of things. So just the importance of overall brain health, and let me just add this on there, our partners are very involved with us in not only talking about brain health, but aging. How do we as people age over the life course, right? These are things that we really emphasize in the initiative.
Thank you for that. I also want to say a part of our secret sauce is the partnership with academic institutions. You know,
Absolutely.
You mentioned Morehouse. We're talking about the University of Southern California, Arizona State, their Global Sports Institute, and then more recently, last year, for the Super Bowl, and that's where we show up. We have our official conference during Super Bowl week is the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, UNLV. So I think that's also very, very important. Can you talk about our work with our young scholars?
I will, but one other really important partner there is the partner that hosts our Sports Spotlight, right? Which is your organization. So I got to give a shout out to you because that part of it, even though we're the Black Men's Brain Health Initiative, we have a prominent role for the women in our overall conference with the Sports Spotlight and the whole bit, our whole town hall kind of thing, because they're really talking about overcoming challenges, excellence, what they've learned in order, life lessons to really become overcomers and high achievers, right? So that message actually resonates higher than anything else that we do. So they're really important. But jump back in, the time will go so quickly. But one of the things that we have found in our premise is that we know this from research, right? People feel most comfortable clinically going to other people who have similar kinds of experiences. I want to see a Black doctor who knows something about my background, right? This happens with women, happens men, all kinds of things. And it's no different in research as well, right? So it's, does someone, can they relate to me culturally, right? And so one of the things that we've very much seen is that we have a lack of people who are trained to conduct research, especially around brain health and aging, that understand from a culturally informed perspective how to deal with different communities, right? So we know Black folks aren't a monolith, right? We know that all Black men are not the same. Black men who are, you know, different across the gender spectrums, they have different things that they think about. Athletes are different, all these other things. We need people, and we're trying to raise a cohort of people. We're trying to help young people understand that their perspectives are really important. So we want to train them to be able to go out and do the research to help us in the areas to know more about these vulnerable populations so we can intervene and help improve people's brain health and how they age.
And that is one of the biggest reasons why I continue to be excited about this work, is having emerging scholars receive the support, the mentorship, the sponsorship, so that we can help build the next generation. We're talking
Amen.
To Dr. Robert Turner, Black Men's Brain Health Initiative on 97.9 FM, If You Only Knew.
You're listening to If You Only Knew on 97.9 The Hill. Here's Dr. Deborah Stroman.
Dr. Robert Turner, Black Men's Brain Health Initiative, just a wonderful, wonderful program that's making a difference all across the country. Do you have any advice for young scholars or people who are interested in going into this space?
Sure. I'm a storyteller, so I'm going to share from my own life experiences. You know, when I was young and played football, all I cared about was playing football. All I wanted to be is an athlete, right? I studied because I knew that the only way to get the NFL is you had to go to college. And to go to college, you had to have a grade. So, but it wasn't a real concern of mine, right? And so, you know, I was a very good C student, maybe C plus student in college. But then later, when I was, you know, I call it my wilderness years because I didn't know what the heck to do out when I transitioned out. But I remember working in New York when I first worked there, and, you know, some guy was talking to me in my office and he was saying, hey, listen, you could go to school and become a doctor going, you know, the medical route, like in the schools in the Bahamas. And I met them saying, like, hey, dude, you don't know me. Like, I'm the least likely candidate to become a doctor, right? And then years later, and I'm not a medical doctor, but I have a PhD, right? And then years later, who knew that I could actually become a doctor? I didn't think that I could, but he must have saw something in me, right? And then on top of that, right now, you know how people say, well, it ain't brain science. Well, guess what? I'm a brain scientist, right? So never let anyone, even yourself, don't let you do this to yourself, but never let anyone limit you to who you can become. Right? Dream big and then find those other people who are doing what it is that you might want to do and ask them how they got there. right? That will help you figure out how to get to where you want to go.
No, that is spot on. I tell young people all the time that my best students, my A students, are the ones who ask for help. They ask questions. It's the C students, it's the students that are struggling who tend to internalize, oh, no one else is going through this. I don't want to show that I'm not sure on something. Where your top students, right? They're the ones who are asking all the time. They're looking for guidance. They want to make sure that they're showing up correctly, and that means they need to speak to the instructors, to the professors. So thank you for
Absolutely.
that. So when you are sitting back in your favorite rocking chair and watching your favorite team play, what do you want your legacy to be? What do you want people to remember you for?
That's interesting. I don't know. I guess really, I hope, really, if I think about a legacy, and my legacy, I hope, is not in sports, right? Although I hope that I help a lot of people in sports. The legacy of a person that I would love to have is my mentor, Dr. James Jackson, right? And if people don't know them, please go online, look at, there's the Michigan Center for Urban African American Aging Research. Dr. James Jackson was a psychologist at the University of Michigan. He was also the director of the Institute for Social Research. This man, and a lot of what we do in our emerging scholars work is because I was a emerging scholar in his program. You talk about a tree and the branches of the tree. Basically, anybody who's doing social and behavioral research around Black people, right, as well as other people who of color, he's over the last 30, 40, 50 years, he's influenced them to the point that, his wife is also one of my mentors. It's just all of everything that I've learned how to do in this space, and someone who's believed in me was him, right? And I see it in so many other people. So if anything that we're doing together through this initiative, years from now, if people can say, you know what? Robert saw and learned from James, and he passed it and created an opportunity for me. Then I feel like I've left something, in this world for people.
Well, as someone who worked closely with you and seen your body of work and your inspiration, when you speak, I say you are on track. You're doing it very well. So I want to thank you. Thank you for this time spent, Dr. Robert Turner, The George Washington University. You're listening to If You Only Knew with Dr. Debbie Stroman on 97.9 The Hill.
You've been listening to If You Only Knew on 97.9 The Hill with Dr. Debra Stroman. You can listen to all episodes at chapelborough.com/ If You Only Knew.